And I remember a lady at church saying, like, you can look sad. It's fine. You should be sad. And it's like, I believe in God's sovereignty. You know, like, I'm fine with whatever happens. I believe I was totally prepared to lose a child. You know, I am ready for that concept, I think, because I believe that God has for us what he has for us and that he has our path planned out. So overall, I know that seems like an odd thing to say for best memory, but it's around my children and the difficulties that we've had with them that I've realized how much I rest in God's sovereignty.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Welcome. Today we're with Chad. He is a husband and a father of 5 children. And Chad is going to tell us some of the things he's learned and has been doing that's been making a positive impact on his family. Welcome, Chad.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate you reaching out. I'm always willing to talk about important things in life, so this is a good one.
Awesome. I'm going to give a summary. So when we talked before, and we're going to get into these 3 items, the 3 big items that you mentioned you're doing, and we're going to talk about the details of these later, daily family devotions and looking out in the calendar, knowing what's going on in the homeschool and family life, and teaching your kids an entrepreneurial spirit. So before we get to those things, I would love to hear a little bit about your background, your own father. What was it like growing up for you?
Yeah, so this is a big thing that I tend to develop a little devotion around concepts commonly that I think deeply about. And a few years ago, and this is something that I've realized over a long period of time, the email address I use has the word blessed in it. And I made that when I was 18 years old because I looked at my life and realized I am so fortunate. That was not a matter of like, that's been misconstrued at times. It's like you think you're physically blessed or something, you know, like, or whatever. But it's not what I mean, really. It's like the fact that I have this family structure that I come from, that I was put in a good church and made to go, you know, when I was young, to the point that I loved it, of course. You know, I never didn't want to go, but it was very intentional of my parents to make sure we were in a good church. And so what I know about my history is that my grandfather, my dad's father, so that, you know, following that patriarchal line, he broke away from a very in name only Catholic tradition and brought us on to a more evangelical Christian path. And so him and my grandmother started, I think, a better family line out of that family. And so I think that there are benefits, extreme benefits, to multi-generational Christianity families. So when a father leads correctly, makes that first generation is very tough, because I have this picture in my mind that, you know, the phrase, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And I envision all of these trees on a hill. And so it is likely that the apple is going to roll down the hill and you'll be worse than your parents typically, unless there is a supernatural event that defies physics that propels the apple up the hill. And that is biblical instruction and following Christ effectively and teaching your kids how to do that. And so I think the Bible speaks to this, just like how generations can be blessed. And I think I'm a part of that. So I see my fatherly tendencies. I'm sitting on the shoulders of giants here, because my grandfather started this. My dad carried it on. I see it as like my responsibility to take what they've built and do a little better. And then I hope that my son, who's 16 right now, does a little better. And that my daughters, I have four daughters after that, and that they can do something in their families to propel that even further. So overall, I had, you know, a grandfather that just bent, you know, towards Christianity, made sure that they were in a good church. My dad similarly made sure that we were in church, showed a good example. I'm trying to be more intentional yet. We homeschool our kids, make sure that all of their education is infused with biblical truth and have the daily devotions. That's not something I experienced growing up, but I'm trying to do a little better than what my dad did.
Do you know anything about your granddad's upbringing?
Yeah. So I actually I grew up on a farm, and my grandfather lived on the farm with us and grandmother. So I was very close with them growing up. And so, yeah, he was one of 13 brothers and sisters, big rural dwelling farm family. And
in Illinois?
Yeah. Wow. Near Springfield, right in the middle of Illinois there. And when he became a Christian, his family disowned him, and he didn't talk to very many of them after that, an evangelical Christian. And again, the Fleck name was known for being kind of a carousing loud drinking type of family, but they went to the Catholic Church sort of a thing. Those are out there. There's Catholics who are more just like
every denomination,
religion, ideology, right? There's you know, there's people who follow it closely and there's not those who don't. And so that's what they had ended up being. And so he was, I mean, to the day my grandpa died, we were all preaching towards them and trying to get them to understand and see, even at his funeral, made sure there was a good gospel presentation so that his brothers and sisters who were still alive could hear it. Yeah, I mean, he had a very strict German father, right? And so it was a very rural dwelling, kind of strict, somewhat mean-spirited, I would say, upbringing.
But I imagine that's a lot of work growing up on a farm. Everybody works hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know it was fun.
Is he the granddad who would tell you that he used to walk up and downhill both ways in the snow?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. There was definitely things like that. And I believed him. I mean,
it was probably true that he's the guy who's telling the truth.
Right. Yeah. I guess the day he died, I shook his hand on his deathbed at 88 years old, and he still had stronger hands than me as a 23-year-old, you know, like the dude was just a monster of a man. Mm.
That's special. So your own dad led you guys in church going, in understanding the gospel, in trying to be an example of what that looks like to follow Christ?
Yeah, I would say it was a little more, I think he's admitted, as I've talked to him about this, as I've become a father, he was a little more osmosis driven, you know, is what he more hoped for. It's like, hey, you're going to see me read my Bible. I'm going to encourage you to read yours. We'll always make it to church. Again, grew up on the farm. It was like, even like right now it's planting season, and it was like, not on Sunday, because we've got church on Sunday morning and we might work in the afternoon, but we're going to be there for Sunday evening too. And then on Wednesday night, we had Wednesday night services. We stop, we go to church, you know, and there's times where it's tempting to, you've got to get the crops in, you know, that's a thing, but it was always the principle that we go to church. We make it to church when it's open. We go to the events, we go to the youth group things when you're of that age and all of that sort of thing. So that was the example that I got.
Tell me two of the most impactful life events that have shaped you as a father.
As a father specifically, I'd say the first one was making the decision to homeschool our kids. So my son, the oldest, was in third grade when we decided to homeschool. And so this would have been in 2017, I believe. And it wasn't like, I don't know, it wasn't anything bad with the school. In fact, like our school here locally, we go to church with a number of people. Like the superintendent of the school district goes to church, he's an elder at our church. And so it's actually really good school in a lot of ways for public school.
Yeah, so a lot of people pick homeschooling to avoid the public school for reasons you didn't mention specifically, but we, mm-hmm. I think we all know what those are. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the case for you.
Right. Yeah, not it was. That reason. The point is, it was, they're still not infusing all their education with Christian ideology, you know, and so it's still not as good as we can do. And I think that any teacher worth their salt would be able to say individual attention is better than one on 25 or 30. Mm. And that's what we can give, you know, that's what we can give our kids, is we can give them more individual attention if we just keep them home and educate them ourselves. And so that responsibility of doing that was, I think, very impactful to both my wife and I, more so her. She's the one who does most of the educating, of course. I think it has a profound impact on a wife and mother when she takes the responsibility of educating her own kids. Grows them significantly, is what I've observed in the people around me that have done it. We have a pretty good big network of people that homeschool as well. But it's helped me too in a lot of ways, just being the intentional, more of an intentional leader, because we know that we have more of them, you know, more of, because education is not just math and stuff, right? Like it's not just math and reading and all of that. It's really just like how to live life in general. And so I think it all relates. So that would be one of them.
So let's jump into number two first then, since we're here, homeschooling. So that was one of the, being involved in knowing what's going on with your kids and wife and homeschooling. That was your second item there. What does that look like for you? How do you do it? What does a typical day look like?
Yeah, we're pretty, so, I mean, I'm meeting with you at 10 o'clock in the morning right now. I do have a day job, but it's a super flexible day job that it's not a big deal for me to flex and move a little bit my schedule. You know, if I have meetings, then I have meetings. But otherwise, it's just I can do work in the evening as I need to. And it's really just a matter of me getting my work done. So that provides us a tremendous amount of flexibility in our life. My wife, you know, goes to run some errands sometimes, and then I'll help them with their math or their Bible verse memorization or whatever, and help them with whatever school principle they need to. Sometimes that's more geared towards me than, you know, it is my wife. And so I'm more, you know, we joke and, you know, I'm more the principal type and my wife's more the teacher type. And so I will help with the finances, of course, and the budgeting of it and all of that sort of thing. Day to day, I don't do as much as she does, certainly, but more my angle, not with the strict education, is the entrepreneurial spirit stuff. You know, I like them to have little businesses. I like them to have ways to make their own money. I intend for them to, as they age, be able to buy their own vehicle when they're 16 and pay for their own fun stuff that they want to, you know, and save towards their future. So that's more my angle. And the education is like, how do you manage money? How do you make money? How do you exist in the world? Sort of stuff.
Yeah, I gotcha. So you would put those together in some ways, that was part of your home education, is teaching them this entrepreneurial spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think education historically has been more that way, is they just kind of are with their parents and they learn life as they go. And that is education. We've become more formal in our education style, you know, in the last couple few generations, of course, which isn't bad necessarily, but I think it's kind of stripped away part of the meaning, which is more broad than just those things that we learn in the classroom.
Yes, agreed. Yeah, sometimes it seems, even my kids sometimes say it, you know, they're doing school and then they're not doing school. It's like there's a giant compartmentalization of what it means to do school. And I personally don't really think like that. Everything to me is, I'm learning something new. I'm doing a new activity. I have a goal that I want to accomplish. So I'm learning something in order to accomplish the goal. Mm-hmm. And even in our family, we do homeschool. And we find that the influence of the formalized education is very strong, just culturally speaking. Something as simple as when you go out, someone asks your kids, what grade are you in? And my kids oftentimes have to take a second to think about it.
Yeah, we don't. It's always a problem with homeschoolers. We don't know commonly either. It's funny.
I think I'm in third grade. So entrepreneurial spirit. So you're focused on that part in homeschooling. Tell me what you do with your kids to help them learn that. What kinds of activities have you done with them, or what kinds of lessons have you taught them? How do you speak to them about it?
Yeah. So this was unintentional, but I have a sweatshirt on. We have a little farm ourselves. So we just have a little 12-acre farm, and I raise meat chickens and pigs, and we go to farmers markets and things like that. And so as we've done that over the years, like, it's like, hey, we're taking a tenth of the farmer's market. We're going to sell meat and stuff. My daughter, just like, one of my daughters really enjoys us running the register, you know, and taking money. And it's just, that's just part of teaching them. Like, they're interacting with society at that point on a transactional level like that. And so they learn to count money. They learn to give change. And people eat this up, by the way, you know, at the farmer's market tent. They love when little kids are doing stuff like this in society. But then they get the experience of, like, this is what stuff costs. This is how you work technology. My oldest daughter would set up and do face painting and just on her own initiative. And people love that stuff, you know, for their real little kids. And so just little ways. We have two Airbnb short-term rentals on our property. And so they're involved with that, you know. They'll help clean sometimes in between. And we show them components of that. And this is how much money it makes. And this is why we do this and so on and so forth. My daughter, part of our farm, is we helped her buy at one point that she has been breeding. She's gone through a few cycles. We actually have 7 puppies right now in the other room. And so she makes $5,000 or $6,000 a year off selling these puppies. And that's her business that she runs. My oldest son has kind of just gone into the workforce more so than anything. We had him doing some things here and there. He was working with small engines and repairing small engines and buying and selling stuff, which we just kind of helped him along with that. He's pretty much doing his own thing at this point, which is part of the idea, is just build a work ethic into them so that they're ready when they get to that point. And one particular thing I've been kind of focused on ever since we started having kids when they were little is like, I'd like them to be ready to live life by the time they're 16. Like, if for some reason they had to, not that I want them gone when they're 16, but just like, they should understand enough about the world and how to live in it by the time they're about that age. I don't want to go on too much of a rant here, but I think adolescence is a made-up idea that has hindered children in our in recent generations. This idea that, oh, I'm an adult and I can do adult things, but I don't have the responsibility of being an adult. That's what adolescence functionally is, I think. So I think that they should grow up a little sooner. Not that they can't do the thing, you know, do younger person things, but I don't think they should think of themselves as kids until they're 25 or whatever, like our society seems to want them to think.
Yeah. Have you been surprised at your children's ability, 15, 16, 14, 14, 15, 16, on what they're actually able to accomplish with significant passion?
I'm not. I mean, I believed that they could. I think society would be surprised at what they could accomplish. I don't feel terribly surprised. I mean, I do have a 14-year-old that is way more politically aware than I would have been, that I would have thought any of my kids that age would be. And yeah, she's very bright and knows what's going on in the world and has good, correct opinions about things. And yeah, so that's a little surprising to me. But overall, I think that, I mean, I've heard and read things about, you know, we used to educate them much more deeply. Heard a story, I think it was Paul Washer. You familiar with Paul Washer? He is an evangelical preacher, but he ended up getting a book from a friend that, you know, older book from the 1800s or whatever. And he was like, this is a very heady, difficult read after reading it for a while. Mentioned that to his friend and he goes, did you look at the front of the book and the inside and who it was for? And it was from somewhere in the mid 1800s and it was for 10th graders, you know, like, and it was just like a very deep, high concepts, you know, and this is a pretty smart guy, you know, theologian that was like, it was difficult for me. So I think that, yeah, we look at history, we see that young people did much more than we seem to think that they can now or should.
Yeah, so true. I suppose on the farm, you're a little bit, I don't want to use the word insulated, but maybe you're able to form a culture in your own household that can avoid a lot of that influence.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we, you know, we're very active in our church. And so there are people, you know, there's a knock on homeschooling. They're like, what about socialization and how are they going to, you know, learn to be around people? And then you hear that we live out in a rural space and we have a farm and you might think that that's even more likely, but you know, we go to church in our little town that's near us here. I mean, little 6,000 people. So that's little by a lot of people's standards, but, it's, you know, there's 400 or 500 people at our church and it's a good church, you know, with good biblical teaching. And we have a lot of people to associate with there. And so, yes, we've got our own family culture for sure. But the truth is my kids have friends at church and they see their friends a lot and they have their own personalities and tendencies, you know, just based on the influence from their friends as well. Mostly good ways, you know, because most of their friends are through our homeschool circles and which are all Christian people.
Yeah. And their parents are involved in their life and as well. Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing the difference that makes in family dynamics when the parents are participating in the family life.
Right. Along yeah. With the and children. It's, I try to tell my kids sometimes and show them instances. It's like, not the whole world is like what you see around you here, you know? And so as they get older, just we see certain circumstances. And like I said, my daughter's pretty aware of the world. And so sometimes, you know, there'll be a news story or whatever that she's aware of. And it's like, you understand that, like, that's how a lot of the world is, you know, what we experience here in our circles is kind of utopian, you know, like it's way better than what you see in most places.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine, not too long ago, and we were talking about our children being homeschooled and being in a good church environment. And he said something along the lines of, you know, they have no idea how good they have it. And I think there's something very true about that. And, you know, more power to them. But I'm, in many ways, that's such a good thing to learn, grow up learning what is good instead of learning what is not good, what is evil first, and then having to sort of relearn something different.
Well, maybe you're familiar with the greenhouse, like how a greenhouse works and how people deal with plants in a greenhouse. This is a good analogy, I think, for how we raise kids. When you start a plant, you keep it in the greenhouse you know, for a good chunk of its early life, because it's a controlled environment where you have ideal conditions. And so you're just you're functionally just giving it all the best things that it needs while it's in that early stages of development. And then what you do with these plants is, like, when the weather is right, you bring them outside, maybe just for the daytime for a little bit, just to get some sun. And then when the sun goes down, you take them back in into the warmer environment. And that gives them some exposure to the elements. And they call that hardening off the plant. I do a similar thing with the animals that I raise. And then as they get older, you move them out for a little longer. And eventually, you leave them out overnight. And then eventually, you leave them out in the rain and a little bit of cold. And eventually, they're just completely hardened off, and then they're okay. And they can just be outside, right? The plant's big enough. It's hardy enough. It's ready for that. And so that's what we believe we're doing with our kids. It's like we're taking them, you know, and put down the children, you know, like, in what circumstances you allow them to go out, and when do you harden them off? What circumstance? And that's a tricky thing about parenting, is which things are too much for them, which things are not enough. We don't want to, but if you keep them in the greenhouse all the time, they're never going to be ready to be outside. So that's the tricky balance you're trying to keep as a parent, is knowing which situations are which for getting them some exposure to the world.
That's a fantastic analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I have not heard someone make that comparison. So that's awesome. I love that. There really is something true about that. I think creating that stable environment where they can understand themselves before you throw them into a chaos where things are very different. It's hard to understand yourself in chaos. It's easier to understand yourself in a somewhat stable environment and then be put somewhere else that's maybe more chaotic. And now you have a baseline to work from. Many of us grew up with so many ideas about what life is about that we're swimming in an ocean instead of being able to swim down a river. So homeschooling, entrepreneurial spirit, and your number one item was daily family devotions and calendar look towards the next day. Tell me what that looks like in your family.
Yeah, and there's been a number of iterations of this concept that I've tried over time. It's been a goal of mine for a long time. Totally admit that it hasn't been awesome all the time. It hasn't been consistent all the time.
Tell me what you've tried.
Yeah. At one point I was building PowerPoints, you know, like with lessons in them and videos and things like that when they were young, so that they could see images on the screen. And just, you know, I was going through just devotions that I would find, but I'd want to make it so that they could understand it better at their younger ages. But then that got kind of onerous and I lost track of it. And then it was just like, hey, let's just read the Bible together, which is not a thing, of course. It's important. And I had different Bibles for their different levels of ages and, you know, just daily Bible reading and that sort of thing.
Now,
when
you did that, did they each have their own Bible for their age and they would open it and they would read along with you, or would you read individually with them? What did that look like?
As they got old enough, yeah, they would read portions of it. At this point, we have kind of it's an abridged Bible of sorts that sort of just tells the stories along with it and has good questions. It's more of a devotion thing, but it goes, you know, sequentially through the Bible in this volumes. And that's what we've been doing for quite a while, is it's just like, here's a story, you know, we're going somewhere in Exodus right now, I think, as we started over recently. And then it's just like, what principles can we pull out of that to our life now? And I don't know, I can usually do that pretty effectively, just like, here, in this story, this is what happened, and this is what I see, and how we can apply that, and then we have a family discussion about that. So it's pretty lean and pretty basic.
How long does that usually last?
25.
Do you do it in the morning or nighttime?
Before bed.
So right before bed at nighttime?
Yeah.
So do you call everybody over? Do you say, all right, we're going to do the family devotions now, and everybody comes and... You sit at the table in the living room. Where do you go?
We're usually in our bedroom here. This is where we have a big master bedroom, and that's where I'm sitting right now. My office is in here, and there's a few places to sit. And I mean, it's more like it's close to 9 o'clock, and that's usually when the kids will separate and they'll go and maybe watch a show or something before bed, and then they go to bed by 10. And my wife, that's the time that my wife and I spend time together, you know? So that's a kind of an intentional thing we do. It's like, kids, kitchen's closed at 8:30, by the way, so have your snacks before then. you guys go to this part of the house. We kind of have it, our house is set up that way. So it's like, you guys go there, and we'll be here. And this is the time that her and I spend together so that we can talk, so that we can understand, you know, what's going on the next day or whatever, you know.
I'm trying to get better at that in my own family. We often are busy. Kids are up, they're doing something. My wife is working on stuff for the next day or grading the, you know, going through the stuff that the homework that the kids did that day. And then that just keeps going almost all the way till bedtime. And I'm trying to get better at stopping at some point to, for us, for my wife and I to hang out, even if it's 30 minutes for us to sit and talk. And sometimes when you're in the zone on working, it's very easy just to keep going and not stop. Mm-hmm. How did you ever struggle with that? Or how did you then stop doing that? I know maybe it seems obvious, but what did that look like for you?
Yeah, I don't, I mean, my wife is very prone to wanting to settle down in the evening. And so she's not likely to just like keep going until 10 o'clock at night or whatever. And I get up at, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning typically. And so I'm usually pretty tired by that time. So I'm not prone to working until midnight or whatever. So it comes pretty natural to us, I guess, to, that's about the time, like,
slow down,
you know, and right. Yeah. It's about the time we're settling down anyway. And we really like our time together. So it's like not a big deal for us to be like, hey kids, you go here. And even when they were little, it was like, this is your time that you're in your room. We don't even care if you go to sleep, 6 year old, like go to sleep, whatever. That's a little bit of a tangent of sorts is, you know, they talk about kids. One of the benefits of homeschooling is like, they can sleep longer. You know, so it's like one of our kids is prone to reading at night for quite a while. And then it's like, if you want to sleep till 9:30, we'll do school at 10. That's fine. And so we've flexed our schedule. You can flex your schedule around like that. And everybody says kids need more sleep. So let them sleep. And so we tend to be a little, we're not super structured about the way we do things. It's somewhat day by day, but we make sure that we do the big things that we need to. And then we see how the rest of the day goes.
So that's your family devotions. You guys come to the bedroom 8:39-ish. Mm-hmm. You all sit together. Does mm-hmm. every age comes together, even the older ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody comes together. You do a 20-25 minute devotion. You read through this the sort of summary version of the Bible, but it has the real stories, and you go through the questions. Do you ever get non-answers from your kids?
Like they don't answer at all?
Yeah, or they're just kind of like, you know, short answers that seem like they're not fully engaged.
Right. Totally. Of course. Yeah. Most of the time, probably.
So what do you do in that scenario? Do you just, you're fine. That's all right. No big deal.
We fine. Can keep going. No, I don't mind. It's like, I know that brain development is a thing, right? Like I said earlier that I think that kids can grow up faster than we tend to think they can. But brain development is a thing. I believe that that is true, that you cannot, your brain is truly not all the way there until I believe it's probably somewhere in your 20s that your brain becomes fully useful like it will be. So I keep that in mind, that I'm just doing the proverbial thing. Like we teach our kids, we tell them the stuff, we get it in their head. It's what happened to me. All right. So that's what I'm kind of going on here. And then all that stuff's there. And then when their brain fully develops, it's like they've got that foundation to work off of. So I'm not too bad out of shape if they're not like giving me terrific engagement, or when they come out of church, it's like, what'd you learn out of that? It's like, you know, not the most profound, deep theological answer. Like that's not that important. I mean, they're just not ready to do that. So there's other signs that you're looking for. Just like, are they engaged? Do they want to go? And that sort of thing, which I see plenty of. So I'm happy with that.
That's good. Yeah. That's interesting. I think, I imagine there's a lot of fathers who, they get caught up, and I've definitely gotten caught up in this before, wanting something out of my, like I'm wanting a result mm-hmm. out of my kids instead of simply them being present, me being with them. I'm looking for some kind of product. So for example, you mentioned Sunday, come out of church and then, you know, what do you guys think of the service? And, you know, the first answer is, you know, so-and-so was wearing a funny hat on the second row. And I'm looking for, you didn't, you know, you didn't pick up on the, you know, eschatological explanation of, you know, Revelation.
All right. Yeah, we happen to be going through Revelation on Sunday mornings right now. But yeah, so I remember, I don't know, do you remember being a kid? Like, were you a kid in church? Like, I remember being a kid in church and not totally being able to focus the whole time and not necessarily getting all of it. But what I know is when I was in my 20s at some point, I had a bunch of concepts in my head. I'm not sure how they got there. I'm pretty sure it's just because I got them when I was younger. And
No, I think you're right. In fact, I would say in some ways that those concepts that I learned by osmosis that I couldn't even, if someone asked me what they were, I wouldn't be able to tell them anything about the topics. I think God really used those to protect me from even worse things than I did growing up, that I think he really used those to, somewhere in my mind, I knew, hey, this is not right. Whatever that is, don't go that far. That's wrong. Don't do that thing. And I don't remember anyone ever explicitly saying those things, but I would have certainly learned those from participating in a church and knowing that those things were destructive and that I should not do them.
Yep. So I try to remind I think largely parenting is this. It is, you've got to recognize that your kids are not adults. Like, they're going to do things that don't make any sense to the adult logical mind. And then you'll ask them, why did you do that? And they'll be like, I don't know. And they truly don't know. And we tend to approach them like they're a peer sometimes. And it's like, why can't you think through this? Why can't you understand why you did this thing? Why did you, and so on?
Can you think of an example from your own family?
I mean, yeah, like, it's like we struggled with our kids committing the same sin over and over again, you know, just like we tend to do, by the way, to God. So, and it's just like, specifically, why? Why did you choose to drive to this place? Why did you choose to completely disobey in this way? And it's just like, I can see it in their face. They're just like, they're frustrated. They're like, I don't know why I chose to deliberately disobey. So, I mean, the Bible speaks to that. Like, I do not do what I want to do, you know, like Paul says. And we got to, yeah. So I aim to recognize that and just recognize that I sin against God all the time too. So they're forgiven just like I am. And we should aim to do the same for them.
Fantastic. Your last item on here is a calendar look towards the next day. Tell me what that looks like. Is that part of that nighttime routine?
Yeah, it's just like on Sunday, we'll look through the week and be like, here's what you have to look forward to. This is what's going on. So kind of look over the whole thing. It's pretty simple, really. We're pretty, at least calendar based people in that way. My wife and I organized ourselves on Google Calendar many years ago. And it's I find that we're more organized than most people about what's going on in our lives. When we interact with them, like, we tend to know, hey, the calendar's open. We can do a thing that day and we'll put it on the calendar and then we'll know and then we'll do it. So it's just like, now that the kids are getting older, it's like they have calendar access and it'll be like, yeah, this is what's going on. And
do they add their own items to the calendar, or do they have their own calendars that then you all share together?
Yeah, they have. So the older ones have a digital option to view a calendar. So they have phones. The three older ones do. Super locked down, by the way. I would not suggest giving.
How old did you decide to give them phones?
13 is the general rule. But I am a big fan of Google's family settings. They work really well. We can have it shut off at a certain time. They can have only certain app access to certain times. Approvals for downloading other things and all of that. It's really good. So anyway, that's just a little aside, because smartphones can be a very evil tool for a young mind who doesn't know how to use it right.
Yeah. Do you use the Google Family link? Okay.
Yeah. I think it works great for my uses. I'm a tech guy though at heart, so I understand. I think some people are pretty intimidated by dealing with technology that intensely. And so, but I'm pretty comfortable with it. I've seriously considered starting like a little ministry at my church. Like, hey, do you need help setting up your kid's phone? Like with parental controls? Like, let me help you do that, because I do understand that pretty well. But a lot of people, I think, are so busy in life. They're just like, I don't know, kid's on my case to get a phone, and all the friends have one and they just give them one, and it can be a portal to a lot of bad things. So we know.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be. No, that's good. You find that it works pretty seamlessly without a lot of work, or without the child being able to come up with a lot of workarounds.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is the only workaround is them getting another device, which has been a problem. You know, even like grandma and grandpa were like, oh yeah, I don't know, we don't use this anymore. You can have this old phone. It's like, no, they cannot. It is not locked down the way that we need it to be. So we've had that sort of situation before. But yeah, the phone itself, they can't get around it. It works great.
That's good. That's fantastic. Yeah, I think that is an often overlooked issue in families to not be more careful. You know, we wouldn't invite drug dealers and strippers into our home, you know, but we do if we let our children have phones that are untethered from the boundaries of the family.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And we aim to let them have some internet access even on their phone, but we do subscribe to like the Covenant Eyes concept, you know, so that we'll, for the older ones, you know, it's like, we'll see if you do something inappropriate. So I don't know. We're feeling our way through. It's a new thing for all of us to deal with, you know, like even my parents didn't have to deal with that, this whole technology issue. Right. So I think we're all figuring it out as we go.
Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. Final, your greatest accomplishment and your greatest failure as a father.
Greatest accomplishment, man. Yeah. I'm not real good at like these specifics, you know, of certain points in time.
Could be your greatest memory.
Greatest memory. I mean, I guess when my fifth child was born, she's got a number of genetic issues. She had heart surgery when she was 7 days old.
Wow.
When like our church did a big, you know, stock the pantry thing for the Flex, you know, and so we went to church and picked up some stuff, and people were like, you know, my wife was kind of a wreck, which is understandable. Like, yeah, she, you know, she had heart surgery. She was a mess. Like, she didn't look good. It was an ugly situation. I was kind of fine, you know, like I just was kind of okay. And yeah, it was weighing on me some. I knew what was going on, but it was, I'm not prone to seeming worried ever, right? Like I do have this, I try to have this presence that's like steady, you know? And I remember a lady at church saying like, you can look sad. It's fine. You should be sad. And it's like, I believe in God's sovereignty, you know, like I'm fine with whatever happens. I believe I was totally prepared to lose a child. You know, I am ready for that concept, I think, because I believe that God has for us what he has for us and that he has our path planned out. So overall, I know that seems like an odd thing to say for best memory, but it's around my children and the difficulties that we've had with them that I've realized how much I rest in God's sovereignty. I just do not worry about things at all. Like, I don't feel like I have any anxiety about anything. There's stuff that I should have anxiety about. I look around and I'm like, wow, I think that, why am I not worried about that? And I think it's because I believe in God's sovereignty fully. So I think that he gives us whatever he gives us. In fact, let me give you a little concept that I really try to base my life around. This is a little wild to a lot of people, but I think it's doctrinally accurate and very helpful if you can do it. And I fail at it commonly, but I try to live this way. I believe that in our sinful state, we don't deserve a single good thing in this world. We don't deserve any good outcome. We don't deserve another breath. Our next breath, we don't deserve that because of our sinful attitude and shape towards God. So when bad things come, we should be like, that makes sense because that's what we deserve is a bad thing, right? We don't deserve that breath. We don't deserve anything good or profitable towards the future. So we should kind of be ambivalent towards bad things because it's kind of what we should get. Good things that come, which by the way, if you're listening to this in the future, the fact that we can talk like this, then you've got good things going because you've got technology, you've got electricity, you've got a warm place, most likely. I mean, we live in the most like beneficial time and easy time to live in human history, easily. And so we should walk around just happy all the time. You asked me when we hopped onto this call, just like, how you doing? And I said, like, how could I be bad? I mean, look at what we have. It's remarkable what we have. We should never be in a bad mood, period. Mm. We should just always be walking around elated because of the blessings of God that are around us. So I aim for that. I aim to not be surly ever for that reason.
That's good though. No, it is. That's a great attitude to have.
So low point. I mean, I try not to be that low, but when my actually my fourth daughter was born, my wife was on bed rest for 4 months during that pregnancy. And we had a lot of help and, you know, people in the church, and had to have like somebody come take care of the three little kids that we had already. While my wife just couldn't move very much. She was stuck on the couch sort of a thing. So that I could go to work, you know, and make money. And I was working a sole commission-based job at that point. And so that was tough on me. Like, I was like kind of worried about my wife all the time while I was trying to do this like pretty demanding commission-based job. And I would definitely have days where I was just like, I can hardly think, you know, like I was just feeling kind of overwhelmed with all that was going on. And so there was definitely days where I would just like sit and not do anything for a number of hours because I was just feeling very overwhelmed. And it was around that time, coming off of that whole season where she was on bed rest, after she ended up being an emergency C-section, and those are bad. I don't know if your wife ever had to have an emergency C-section, but it's not good.
Yeah.
Recover for it's really hard and all that. And so I just remember laying there that night after that all happened and just being like, I've got to turn it up and be more of a leader and a better man than what I showed during that time of bed rest that she was on. Like, I was not pleased with the way I reacted some of the time and that. That was part of what got me to that attitude. So that was the fourth daughter. That was in 2013. And then by 2017, when my next daughter was born, I felt like I was in a better place to handle the difficulty for sure. But I did feel like that was kind of a low point there during that time.
That was the low point, but also the turning point in your attitude of how I should face difficulties and how I should look at God's providence in those difficulties.
Right. Yeah. Overall, I think it set me on that path of, you know, I aim to be pretty tough and be able to deal with difficulty. But that whole event, like, was a little bit rock bottom for me. And it's maybe not the same kind of rock bottom that other people might experience, but it was mentally for me. Yeah. Yeah. Just being overwhelmed like that. And, yeah. But I think I've spun off of that in the last 12 years and learned a lot and done much better with handling difficulty.
Yeah, praise God. Awesome. Hey, well, Chad, thank you so much for being here with me today. I really appreciate all your insight, and I hope that, I know that even for me, you know, when I hear the daily devotional, I think, yeah, you know, I've thought about doing a daily devotional for a long time. We usually do a weekly, we do it on Sundays, and I haven't gotten myself over the hump of doing a daily one yet, but that's certainly something I can take from our conversation.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be, man, it doesn't have to be a long time. That's something that I, even like your own, I try to encourage people, like, don't break your back over or your mind over trying to like do the hour long Bible reading, you know, like sometimes it's okay to check the box. All right. I see spiritual development sort of like eating, you know, if you think of it like this. So you do not need to eat every minute of the day, right? You need to eat to sustain yourself. So you eat the right thing and it sustains you for a while. And you have a spirit. And that's something our world doesn't really understand. I think Christians don't even understand that super well sometimes. That we have this physical side to us that we obviously see and interact with a lot. So we easily know that that exists. But we have a spirit that needs fostered as well, that needs taken care of as well. And so when we do our Bible reading, or we do the devotion with our kids, or when we pray before a meal, those are all little snacks for our spirit, you might say. And then when you go to the conference, or you go to the Sunday morning or whatever, those are better meals, right? That'll sustain you better. But sometimes it's okay just to have the snack quick, just read the Bible verse, just think, dwell on the thing, you know, and then go on with your day, because your spirit has been enriched, which will help you to go through your day. So yeah, it doesn't have to, I'm just trying to encourage you, like, don't overthink it. That's what happened to me a lot of the time, is like, I was trying to do this extravagant thing. Yeah, find a daily bread, you know, devotional or whatever, and just do something. It doesn't matter what it is.
No, that's good. You know, I we've been reading the J.C. Ryle's book. Have you read it? The Thoughts for Young Men. Yeah. We've been reading that at church, and he talks about that idea of taking care of your soul. And I would agree with you. I think that is in our materialistic world, even for Christians, it's a lost concept. And I think it's lost to our own detriment, because we often then, we think in materialistic terms. We think in my body and my brain, and then that's it. and we just stop there. And even in this last year or two, I've been just realizing I've seriously neglected this other part of me. I think about something as simple as when I'm making a decision, there's something I want, my desires, and then there's a way I feel about that. And then there's something else in me. It's not just my body wanting something and my mind thinking about the thing or feeling that thing. There's another thing in me that tells me what I ought to do. And that is partly my soul telling me the things I ought to do, my conscience. And to neglect that is to neglect a huge chunk of our, of how God made us. And so I think you're 100% right on that.
Yeah, so here's a somewhat half-baked, three-quarter-baked analogy that I've been dwelling on as it relates to this. I do this is how I do this all the time. I think on things deeply, and then I try to develop a way to talk about it. So this is a very guy-centric analogy, which is good for this setting, I suppose. Lawnmower blades. So you ever sharpened lawnmower blades before? Is that something you live in an urban area?
I tried to sharpen once a lawnmower blade.
All right. So here's the thing about lawnmower blades. They need to be balanced. So if you have a little thing that you put the lawnmower blade on when it's a two-sided blade, and you don't want to sharpen one side too much and not sharpen the other side. I mean, it won't cut very evenly as part of it, but also over time, if they're not balanced, then it'll like mess with your mower and it'll damage your mower and everything. But then your grass won't be cutting well, right? Because one side's not as sharp as the other and it'll make it uneven and those types of things. So they have these little things that you set the mower blade on as you sharpen it so that you can see that it's staying balanced. So you're not sharpening off one side more than the other. So in its most basic level, we have a physical side and a spiritual side. And we've got to sharpen those things somewhat evenly. So if you let yourself go physically, then it's going to affect your ability to live life effectively. And if you let your spiritual side go, it's going to affect your life negatively. And then you know what? Your yard is not going to look right. And people notice when your yard doesn't look right. And so when you're out of balance in either of those things, because there is some importance to physical health as well, of course.
Yeah.
But most commonly people are neglecting their spiritual side. Then your yard doesn't look right. It has an impact on your community. It has people notice and, it doesn't look very good. So that's my little metaphor that I've thought of.
That's good. That's nice. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.